Why, hello out there. Welcome to Spoiler Peace Theater, the podcast that doesn't give a shit about spoilers. We just want to talk about the movies. My name is Dave Riedel. My pronouns are he, him. I write and I talk about movies, and I'm a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association.
My name is Evan Crean. I'm co-chair of the Boston Online Film Critics Association, co-author of your 80s movie guide to better living, and my pronouns are he, him.
And my name is Megan Kearns. My pronouns are she, her. I write film reviews for Edge Media Network. I'm a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association and a member of Gallica, the Society of LGBTQ Entertainment Critics. And I'm also feeling a little under the weather. Spoiler alert.
Yeah. Is it a spoiler, though? I mean, you sound a little raspy there. You know, I don't know. Actually, you really don't sound
I don't know. Or maybe it's my sexy voice.
That's right. How we have character Dave, sexy Megan, and I guess we got to come up with a character for Evan. So, although I do have a question. I don't know why I just thought of this, Evan. And I've probably asked you this on the show before, but I have no memory. So has anybody ever mispronounced your last name, Crean?
I don't think so. Okay. I don't think that's one I've heard.
Okay. Just one. Evan Crean. Okay. So
I was like, I'm shocked nobody has, just because we've talked about our names being mispronounced.
Yeah, there are so many ways to mispronounce a name. So you just, you never know.
That's why I'm very surprised. But I'm glad to hear that that has not happened.
But on to movies. Tonight on the show, we will be discussing the Harry Styles starring My Policeman and the Mike Myers starring Halloween Ends. thank you. And I don't know why that tickled you both so much, but
it made me think of, there's this guy, and I know he's an Instagram, I don't know if he has other stuff. His name is Jimmel Paint Pit, and he'll just paint whatever people tell him to, but he did one. It was a series of Michael Myers characters in Halloween scenes. So there's like Shrek creeping from behind the bush. There's like Wayne, you know, smashing his way through the closet. It was very funny. Okay. That's where my mind went.
But before we get into that, we just want to mention really quickly over on our Patreon. Yes, Patreon. It's October, so we're talking about some horror movies, and we are talking about the 2013 horror movie Oculus, about an evil mirror. So that's a lot of fun.
It's
if
evil.
You're
super evil.
If you're a $5 patron or higher, that is available to you right now. And if you're not a patron, please consider becoming one, because it is so much joy to talk about the stuff we talk about over on Patreon. Not that it isn't a joy here, but over there we get loose. We get crazy and let our hair down. And I got long hair right now, so. Anyway, perhaps, gang, we should move on to My Policeman. Was that you who was singing it like My Sharona?
No, it was me.
My Policeman. Yeah.
It's too early for that, unfortunately. This story partly takes place in the 50s. So we're preempting My Sharona, sadly.
That's all right. How do we know that Harry Styles didn't write My Sharona and then it was stolen by the Knack, you know? So. Okay, My Policeman. This is the description. The arrival of Patrick into Marion and Tom's home triggers the exploration of seismic events from 40 years previously. Man, is that clunky. I mean, technically that's correct, but, you know, the exploration of seismic events, yes, he's a spelunker, and they're now, you know, categorizing underground earthquakes. I mean, what the fuck is that sentence? Okay, so anyway... This is directed by Michael Grandage, written by Ron Nisweiner, I don't know, based on the novel by Beth Ann Roberts, starring Harry Styles, the one and only Harry Styles, Emma Corrin, and Gina McKee, who is the older Emma Corrin. And basically, this is about... who wants to explain this better than I can? It's about Harry Styles is... a policeman.
Yes. I would say he meets Patrick, who's an art curator, a museum curator. He meets Patrick first. Technically, it seems, within the timeline of things. He has known Marianne, his sister was friends with her, and, you know, they've hung out together, and then he meets Patrick, it seems, and then they kind of hit it off. I think he, I forget the order of things, but basically he ends up, Patrick's like reporting an accident, and then the person flees the scene, and then they like see each other, and he's, you know, he's like, oh, I work at the museum, you should come by sometime. And he's like, oh, I've always wanted to develop appreciation for art. So he's like, yeah, sure, come by, you know. And then Harry Styles, his character, goes and stops by the museum, and then they strike a rapport. He, Patrick asks him, to come over because he wants to draw him. He's an amateur artist. And then, you know,
amateur pencil sketch artist.
Yeah.
But
they get to know each other over the drawing session, and some drinks happen, and, some moves are made. And then, so that's kind of like happening. And then like concurrently, he's also starting to spend more time with Marianne. And then the three of them start spending time together, and, all right, someone else take over, because now I feel like I'm rambling.
And then Tom and Marion get married, and Tom carries on, well, I guess you can call it an affair because it is extramarital, carries on an affair with Patrick, and then Marion finds out about it because she sees them, I think she sees them like kissing at like the country house or whatever. And so Marion rats out Patrick to the police, and he is arrested and imprisoned for 2 years. And she lies on the stand, like there's a trial and everything, and she lies on the stand and says she has no idea that Patrick is gay, or that, you know, Tom's not under arrest, but the implication, because he's written about in Patrick's journal or diary or whatever you want to call it, the implication is that the court knows that Tom is gay too. And so in the present day, Rupert Everett is Patrick, and he's recovering from a stroke. And Gina McKee is Marion, and she has Patrick move into their house. And Tom's like, this is bullshit, as Linus Roach. And so, you know, Tom is just kind of, he takes the tack in the 50s and then in the present too. Although they would be a whole hell of a lot older than Gina McKee, Linus Roach, and Rupert Everett if, you know, it was the 50s and it was 2022, but leaving that aside.
In the book, it's the 90s. So I don't know.
Okay.
It's the 90s, Dave.
I beg your pardon. Holy fuck.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying I don't know if it is supposed to be today or the 90s, but in the book, it's the 90s.
I'm responding to Evan's rather snarky, okay, it's the 90s, Dave.
Well, yeah, because people always used to like to say, like, come on, it's the 90s. You got to be more like whatever, you know, we got to be more with the times, Dave.
Got it. All right. You got to be with the times 27 years ago. So, Thomas, you know, had conflicting feelings about his relationship with Patrick the whole time. Whereas Patrick is, I mean, he's not out, but he is a gay man. He's not, you know, he doesn't date women to pretend to be straight. Whereas Tom stays married to Marion, and I guess they have a miserable life together. I don't know.
It sure seems that way.
They don't really cover the 40 years between, you know, Patrick being imprisoned and eventually released, and the stroke. Although, you know, this is one of those things where I got to say, all right, I'm just going to say this movie sucks. So, and part of the reason you know
Guns
it's trash.
Blazing.
Yeah, part of the reason you know it's trash is because you have Rupert Everett in there and you paralyze half of his body so that he can't be Rupert Everett. I mean, come on, you know? Have Linus Roach be the guy who's recovering, and so that Rupert Everett can be like the, you know, witty, snide guy. I know that that's not the only thing he does, but, you know, I saw Rupert Everett's name in the credits. I'm like, oh, I haven't seen him in years. This will be great. And then he's in the movie for like 4 minutes. So, and Gina McKee.
He's still acting his ass off.
Yes, that's true. Yes. He is. He's definitely... It's kind of, I always think about like James Caan stuck in the bed in Misery when I think about like super physical actors who are playing characters that can't really move. And that's kind of how Rupert Everett is in this.
Yes. Great analogy.
Whereas Linus, thank you. Whereas Linus Roach is just Linus Roach, except sadder.
And forever. He's always just Linus Roach.
Yeah. And then Gina McKee is just like, she's been so good in so many things. It's like, what are these three, you know, two great actors and one, I would say Linus Roach is just fine. What are these three people doing in this wraparound story that means fuck all, really? They have nothing to do. I mean, God. Getting back to the 50s, let's also go and talk about this. Yes, that's right. Guns blazing. Yep.
I dig it.
Jumping Harry right Styles, into the deep end.
Harry Styles, his performance is just bad. Now, I will say, you mm-hmm. could make the argument that because Tom is so buttoned up and repressed, that maybe Harry Styles is playing that. I don't think so.
No, doesn't feel like it.
As someone who has seen Don't Worry, Darling, and he is atrocious and abysmal in that, I can tell you that is just the way he acts.
Okay.
But it kind of work in this role accidentally. But yeah.
I think the thing that's most disappointing about this movie is that there are no surprises. There is no mystery. Everything unfolds exactly as you think it will.
Right.
And it doesn't even really look very good. Like all of the scenes inside are the same kind of drab, and all of the scenes outside are the same kind of blown out. And I think Emma Corrin was fine. I think the guy who played young Patrick was good. I just think that, you know, aside from Harry Styles being in this, what is the brouhaha about this movie? I guess you could be like, well, it's a gay love story, but it's not. It's about, you know, gay men who get punished for being gay, which I've definitely had enough of. So, this movie is just kind of, I mean, I don't want to say dog shit because that's really not nice. But this is just a crap movie. So
I'm so intrigued and glad that you said it's about gay men being punished for being gay, because I think it's fascinating that it's directed by an out gay director. David Dawson, who plays Patrick, is a gay man. Emma Corrin is a non-binary queer person. Harry Styles is, we don't know because he does not disclose his sexuality, and that's mm-hmm. totally his business and totally fine. And it's nobody's business. He doesn't want it to be. But I think it's very interesting that there are so many queer people behind the scenes and in front of the camera. And yet I'm watching this as a queer person and I'm like, you know, I want to applaud this because we need more queer stories. We need more queer history on screen. But I'm like, but what new things is this really bringing to the table? What new ideas? What new thoughts, themes, characters, anything? And there's nothing. And, you know, before I saw this, what I had thought maybe and what had hoped, because I did not read the book, I did not read the synopsis of the novel, I hoped that maybe it was kind of a cool thruple thing, or maybe mm-hmm. the fact that Marion was in on it, like she knew that they both were gay and she was like, hey, we're friends, right. Let's get married. And, you know, because I just saw the first two episodes recently of Shudder's Queer for Fear. And in the second episode, they talk about Anthony Perkins and his queerness and how Anthony Perkins' wife knew about his queerness and was like, you know, I love this person and I'm just going to rally around him and be supportive. And I was like, oh, wouldn't that be cool if that's what Marion is doing? But no, that's not what's happening. Instead, she is so wildly homophobic. And I really, I will say to the film's credit, I think Emma Corrin is great. And I think David Dawson, I think you're right, Dave. I think he's really good too. I like that scene between Marion and her coworker, the teacher, who's like, oh, if you think that they're unnatural and wrong, then you think that about me too, because she's a lesbian. And it's a really great scene, but it shows how homophobic she is. And so then I was kind of hoping, like, in the fast forward, the flash forward, like when they're in the 90s or today or whatever it is, I was hoping like maybe she'd be like, wow, I was a horrible person. I was so homophobic. I can't believe I was so hung up on that. There would be some kind of reckoning, but there isn't. There's nothing except she's like, well, I'm going to leave. And now you have to take care of your lover. The end. Yeah.
And she says something effective, like, I think about what I've missed out on, like in parentheses, by being in this marriage. And it's like, you do know you could have left this marriage at any point if you wanted to.
Right. Thank you, Evan.
Like, you didn't have to pick now, like a really weird, awkward time to like walk out on him. Mm-hmm. Just like throw your hands up and say, I don't want any more part of this.
Yeah.
So I found that choice, character choice, frustrating. But I want to echo a lot of the things that both of you were saying. I don't think I thought this was as shitty as Dave thought.
I just thought this was so fucking bad.
I found it very just blah and uninteresting. And I think I felt almost no chemistry between Harry Styles and David Dawson, who plays the young Patrick. I think
Thank
to
you.
Make this movie and to not have any chemistry, like, that's, to me, is a death nail. You know, it's a nail in the coffin.
You could skate a long way with a crummy screenplay if it was fucking hot, you know?
Right?
Right. And for me, that it boils down to, like, their relationship to me does not work at all. And so this movie has a hard time working around it. But I also agree with everything you're saying about, like, yeah, it's, you know, about queer people being punished for being queer. And like, we don't see any of this intervening time, you know, like, we don't know what either of them have been up to, but we can assume they basically just spent this entire time suffering.
Yeah.
In a loveless marriage, and who knows whatever the hell Patrick's been up to in this entire time, but it doesn't feel like he's been happy or found anybody. It wasn't like, you know, maybe he found somebody and they died. You know, we literally know nothing about the intervening time. So we only know this brief, you know, love story and the tragedy of it all. And then we just are in present day, which is tragic too.
Because, and yeah, the fallout of that misery. I mean, it's just like, it's a miserable experience, you know?
Well, it's funny because when Patrick's in prison and Marion goes to visit him and he's like, well, you won. She's like, what? And he's like, you won. You got Tom. And she's like, none of us won. And I'm like, that's the thesis here. That's the takeaway, that you're all going to be miserable. Like, what is this?
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, ridiculous. The 50s were a different time, you know, so.
I mean, I guess.
I mean, they were. You could be arrested in England and imprisoned for being gay, but, you know, it's just like, as the movie shows us. But at the same time, it's just kind of like, I've seen this. I've seen it, man. I mean, for one thing, Brokeback Mountain. I mean, it's pretty much the same story. except, did the wives know about that? I don't think they do. I haven't seen that in years, though, so who knows? And there's a couple other movies, of course, that I can't remember the names of right now. But it's just... and anchored by just a listless performance from Harry Styles, so...
Oh, yeah.
You know.
I think the really interesting thing about the inception of this is that the novel that it's based on, I read an interview, I think it was at Vanity Fair, with Beth Ann Roberts, the author of the novel, and she was asked about where she got the idea of this. And she got the idea of this because E.M. Forster had a relationship with a policeman, and the policeman was married to a woman. And when E.M. Forster was like on his deathbed, the woman, the wife, was apparently holding his hand and tending to him or taking care of him or something to that effect. And the author was like, wow, that's so amazing. And I'm like, yeah, oh, okay, that's fair. And I'm like, you know, it kind of reminded me of a film I saw last year that was a really lovely film. I believe it was an Iranian film, and it was about a woman who is married and her ex-husband is dying, and she has him come live with her and her husband. And it's this lovely, lovely story, and it really gets into these great character developments. And I'm like, okay, that's a great possible place to start for a story, but it doesn't just stop and end there. Like, you need more. You need actual characters. You need to actually explore this. And it's kind of shocking to me that there are, again, so many queer people involved, and this is what they came up with. I'm like,
right.
Ah!
I mean, okay. I mean, it's based on, you know, it's got some source material, but I think honestly it would have been more daring if, you know, Tom had been bi, you know, like you were saying,
Thank
like
you.
Maybe
yes,
it was a throuple maybe it wasn't a throuple, but if he was actually bi, if you felt like he like really was legitimately interested and torn between these two relationships, like, I really love Marion and I want to be with her for the rest of my life, but I feel like I also really want Patrick and I'm really stuck in this situation. And I just felt like when he was with her, it was like clear that he didn't want to be with her. And like, and that would have been a more interesting movie, I think.
I agree with you.
I just want to mention, by the way, that until this, this is one piece of trivia that I do know about the novel. Until this movie was announced as being a Harry Styles vehicle, this novel was never released in the United States. It was only released in the US. So it's like, you know, it's not a hard rule, but generally, if your novel isn't released in other English speaking countries outside your own, I don't know. People say it's great though, but I, you know.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
I know source material and the movies, you know, that are made from them don't resemble each other, but who knows? I'm not going to be reading it because I just don't. This is one of those. It's like, well, maybe I should read the book. It's like, I don't fucking care. So, anything else, gang?
Yes, actually.
Oh.
I this is more a minor thing, but still it was something enjoyable to me. I really appreciated that. Oh, and something else interesting I'm realizing as I'm about to say this. I really appreciated that, and the book is set in Brighton as well. I really like that the film is, they keep the setting in Brighton, because as I'm watching certain things, I've been to Brighton and it's a lovely coastal town. It's also the LGBTQ capital of the UK and has an extensive queer history. And so that is fascinating that they're setting this queer story that is set in the 50s in the queer capital of the, what is now the queer capital of the UK and has been for at least a decade, if not decades, plural. And yet they do nothing with that. Nothing. Other than we see Patrick at a bar and making out with a guy about to have sex, and then the cops come and then he's on the run and the other guy gets arrested. But I'm like, wouldn't it have been nice to kind of delve in even a little bit to that history? Just a smidge, but no. But I liked seeing Brighton because it's a beautiful place.
Mm-hmm. Squandered opportunities on the silver screen.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I also didn't think this was dog shit. I didn't hate this like you did, Dave. But this was wildly frustrating. And I agree. There is, Harry Styles cannot act. Stop casting him, people. He cannot act. There, and I agree with you, Evan. There's zero chemistry between him and David Dawson. And by the way, Patrick and Marion have more chemistry. Like when they're talking about art, it's far more interesting.
Well, they're superior actors too.
Yes. Yes, they are. It's very clear. But yeah, so it just, there is no chemistry. It doesn't work. The wraparound story should work. It doesn't. Mm-hmm. This was just, needs to be better written, better acted. And it's wildly frustrating.
Go ahead, Evan.
I was gonna say, I will say though, that the very end of the movie did work for me. When they shared that embrace, when he walked over to him, when he was sitting in the wheelchair and he put his arm on his shoulder and Tom put his arm on Patrick's shoulder, that did actually work for me. When they were just like stood there for a moment and you could kind of see the reflection in the window and you could see the reflection of the ocean. That to me actually, I thought was a really effective way to end the movie. I just felt like I wish it had earned everything the rest of what led up to it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, and again, I think that speaks to the power of Rupert Everett's acting abilities just with his face, because he's doing such a great job. But yeah, I agree with you, Evan. That's a really beautiful scene. It's unfortunate the rest of the film is not as wonderful.
Yeah. I also want to clarify, just because, and this is not a dig in any way, when I describe something as dog shit or really bad or terrible, you know, I have to say I didn't hate this, but it's just, but I know it's weird, right? But it's just, it's so fucking, it's more of like curious to me. It's so fucking bad. Like I just, you know, it's not bad enough to be fun, but it's just bad. And sometimes it's like Huey Lewis said, sometimes bad is bad. I mean, just, you know, it's just, oh my God. Anyway.
Well, my apologies that I misspoke. and miscategorized no, no, no. There's your no, enjoyment there's no or way you could, thereof.
There's no way you could know that. So, so apology not necessary, but thanks. okay, sounds like we are now talked out on My Policeman, if I'm not mistaken. Is that true? Shall we move on to Halloween Ends?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Do we have to? I'm sorry.
Well...
I'm sorry. Now I'm coming like out guns blazing.
Yeah, I feel like it's more of a talker than My Policeman, though. I don't.
Yeah,
I
just, that's actually true. Maybe.
So this is Halloween Ends. This is apparently how the new trilogy ends. The saga of Michael Myers and Laurie Strode comes to a spine-chilling climax in the final installment of this trilogy. I don't know about spine-chilling.
My spine didn't get cold the entire time.
Directed by David Gordon Green, as the other two Halloweens have been. This one is written by four people, but all together, not like separate people, including Danny McBride, and stars everybody who lived through Halloween Kills and one additional major cast member. Perhaps we should talk about, or just kind of go through Halloween Kills, because these the one thing that's really, I don't know, this is so frustrating. The Halloween 2018 movie, I thought was really good. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Me too.
A lot of people had a lot of fun with that. And then when we decided to watch Halloween Ends, I'm like, oop, better watch Halloween Kills, which I had heard was terrible. And guess what? It's terrible.
It's worse than I thought it was going to be.
I know.
It was a fucking train wreck.
It's so bad. It's kind of a miracle, you know,
yes.
Because it's like you've done the impossible. You've made a really good sequel to a classic horror movie. And then the movie, it's kind of like Star Trek, the one where they redid Khan. It's like you went to the trouble in the J.J. Abrams reboot of doing the Kelvin timeline instead of the other Star Trek timeline, and then you go ahead and introduce Khan anyway. What the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah,
you know,
it was, and then ridiculous. Yeah, it was so stupid. It was really, really annoying that was the decision they made.
Yeah, and this is kind of how I feel about Halloween Kills. It's like you had all of this great stuff going on in the first one, which I think it would have been good enough to end it there, really.
Agreed.
If he had just burned to death in that fire.
Yeah,
but instead, it picks up just like Halloween 2 does, which I realized the other day, you know, I don't think I've ever seen that all the way through.
Mm. I saw it a long time ago. I don't remember a thing other than it immediately picks up where the first John Carpenter Halloween movie ends.
And this one does too. Halloween Kills picks up exactly where Halloween ends off. Or ends, I should say. See,
Halloween 2018 might be helpful to say.
Halloween Kills picks up where Halloween 2018 stops. Let's say stops, so we don't accidentally say the name of the other Halloween movie. But Halloween Kills, just refresher, is about how hysteria and et cetera, can drive people crazy, and then they become the monsters in the thing. And it's just, as I wrote in my Letterboxd review, this is a bunch of good ideas executed really, really poorly.
Yeah.
Just like the whole thing with everybody shouting "Evil dies tonight."
Oh,
it's just like,
God,
that's so stupid. You know, it's just dumb. It's just a bad, it's, I know that people say dumb shit. I mean, Marjorie Taylor Greene is a person, but like, you know, you shouldn't say dumb shit like that in screenplays, especially if it's coming out of Anthony Michael Hall's mouth, you know, who, by the way, that guy has aged in a very different way from how I thought he would. But, if I ever thought about it at all. And
well, also, you know, why are you repeating the bad line? If you're going to say it once, because sometimes people do say silly, goofy things in real life and you want to make it sound realistic, why do you keep repeating the bad things like Evil Dies Tonight, The Boogeyman? Why are you repeating it? It's just, it drove me
Halloween Kills
wild.
Is so, Halloween Kills is just so frustrating.
And then you kill Judy Greer.
Yes.
The best person in the movie you're going to kill off.
Halloween 2, the original, the 1981 Halloween 2, the entire movie, if I recall, Jamie Lee Curtis is in the hospital. In Halloween Kills, the entire movie, she's in the hospital. And it's like, is this a tribute or is this just a bad decision? You know?
It's a bad decision.
Yeah.
Both?
It's just,
Evan, I apologize profusely. Please, what were you going to say?
It is just, like you said before, you're like, how can this be as bad as everyone says it is? And it is.
Right?
It is just so bad. It squanders any goodwill or esteem established by Halloween 2018. And it just flushes it down the toilet with a Michael Myers who seems to be killing even indiscriminately for him with very... like intense kills, and you're just like, why? I don't feel like I believe or understand why Michael Myers would be killing some of these people. Like, at least in other points, his kills make a kind of sense, and in this, he's just so senselessly murdering so many people, and the movie is just concentrating on like absolute gore. Like, the first Halloween 2018 was this great story about like trauma and like fighting your demons, both literal and personal, and this movie is just about, you know, over the top violence, and it has kind of an interesting thing to say. You know, you were talking about before this idea of like vigilante justice and mob rule and how that's bad, but they even get sidetracked from that, trying to dissect Michael Myers as a person and like analyze his homicidal urges. Like, What? Why are we doing that? This is not a series where we're like examining the psychology of this character or trying to like posit anything about him. It's just a waste of time, and it's distracting from the only interesting part of the movie, which was this statement about what happens when people, you know, band together and try and enact their own kind of justice.
Right. And the other thing, and I completely agree with you, Evan. And also the interesting thing that happens in Halloween 2018 is trauma and intergenerational trauma, you know, passing it down and how the Strode women band together and become a unit and how this strengthens their bond. And then it just is ripped apart. I mean, I know we're not even at Halloween Ends yet, but it becomes ripped apart to shreds in this one and in that one. And, you know, I agree. There could have been something really fascinating with mass hysteria and vigilante justice, and it just, no, there's nothing. There's too much bad writing, horrendous acting. The acting is so bad, even by people who are normally good. Ugh, it's just so bad.
I will always give Will Patton a pass, though.
Listen, I like Will Patton, too. I like him in a lot of things.
Yeah,
he's not great here.
Well, I think a part of the problem...
That's not his fault.
Exactly. I think part of the problem with Halloween Kills is it's just a shitty execution, you know?
Yes.
Execution.
I see what you did there.
Yeah, that was an accident. So, So anyway, Halloween Kills ends with Judy Greer being murdered by Michael Myers because she makes the mistake of standing in his childhood bedroom. And
after, by the way, an entire mob of people was stabbing and shooting and trying to kill Michael Myers. This is another problem I have. Sorry about this character. Is like they straddle the line on whether Michael Myers is actually a man, a killable man, or a paranormal like supernatural force like Jason or Freddy. And they basically have him on the ground, like dead, and then he gets up and just murders everybody who's trying to kill him. And you're like, is he supernatural or is he not?
Good question.
Yeah, you can't have it both ways.
No, and they want to have it both ways.
Maybe on Halloween night he's supernatural, and every other night he's like, God damn, I shouldn't have killed that extra Shriner because now my back really hurts.
You know? But here's my problem, and this is, and Dave, you talk about this. I think you talked about this when we were talking. Maybe an Oculus, or maybe you said it even before we were recording, but you talked about you hate stupid horror movies and you hate when people are when they don't think in a horror movie. And I was saying that it's amplified in a horror movie, you know, just because of the primal emotions and actions happening and the survival elements going on. Why in Halloween Kills there's not one person who stabs him in the head, shoots him in the head, decapitates him, nothing.
Right.
So of course he's going to come back. Like, I mean, that's the horror movie rule, but it's so infuriating that you don't just do one thing once. Like, no, you stab repeatedly. You stab in the head. Right. You make sure they're dead. You empty your gun. You empty you all the bullets. The job. And it's just so frustrating because it's very clear that they're doing this strictly so there can be a third one. There is no logical reason why they wouldn't do this when you have a mob of people. They would be tearing his limbs apart.
Right.
Yeah. And no, but it doesn't happen because the script, it's like, no, we need him to survive for the third one. And it's just, it's so illogical and just inane. And I hate it. I hated it.
Yeah. Yeah. And no one attacks him together.
It.
Everybody attacks him one at a time. Like, of course you're not gonna get anywhere that way.
No. This movie made me so mad.
Me too.
So dumb. Ah.
Yeah. This is I don't know if it made me mad the way it did make me mad it made me mad when Judy Greer was killed. But
right?
I don't know. If there's ever a performer who I'm just like, I have goodwill toward, it's her, you know? So
she's the best. She's so good.
I love that interview she gave. She's like, I'm fine playing the best friend. I get to be an actor. What are you talking about? You know?
That's the right attitude.
Yeah. So anyway, Halloween Ends picks up 4 years later. Actually, no, it begins a year later. So here's the thing. So let's divert to the Hangover series for a second. The Hangover and The Hangover Part 2 are the same movie. And you could make the argument, not as, you know, strictly, but you could make the argument that Halloween 2018 and Halloween Kills are more or less the same movie. Halloween Kills is just a lot more. And then The Hangover 3 is like a completely different fucking movie from a different universe. And that's kind of how Halloween Ends feels.
Yes.
This is a different movie about a guy who accidentally killed a little boy he was babysitting, because in fairness to the guy who killed the little boy was a total fucker. But, I mean, that's the other thing. Don't, you know, if you're going to kill a child in a movie, first of all, I hate that. But second, maybe the child shouldn't be a total fucking dick, you know, because then it's just kind of like, well, I mean, I don't want children to die, but this is a movie and he did suck. So,
yeah. He did lock him in the attic and he had to kick down the door, and he kicked down the door and knocked the kid over the staircase and he fell and died. You know, it's not like he pushed him or the parents just heard him say, I'm going to kill you, and then saw the child's body fall. So they were like, okay, he fucking killed our kid.
I also blame the parents for this lack of child safety in the house.
Yeah.
To have a door that would swing open that could knock someone over, but I digress. Yeah.
So anyway, that guy's name is Corey, and I guess he doesn't spend too much time in prison because he is able to prove that it was an accident. And I guess that's true. You could be like, I was locked in the, you know, the attic, and then you could see how the door is broken down from the inside, you know. So those things are provable. Fine. He returns to Haddonfield. Lori has stopped drinking and she's been in therapy and she's writing a memoir about the Michael Myers thing. And what's the granddaughter's name? Allison? Yeah. Allison is living with her seemingly happily. Allison is now a nurse and she thinks she's going to get this nice promotion. And she meets Corey, who gets bullied by some band kids.
I did find that comical.
Is it just me, or is 2022 like the weirdest fucking year for high school kids? Because the band kids are the assholes in this movie.
Right? Like, in what world are the band kids bullying people?
I know.
And I say this as someone who was friends with band kids.
Yeah, it's amazing. I don't know a lot of people who play trumpet who are just like, I'm going to fuck you up, you know? So.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty funny that they were the bullies.
Yeah.
So these four kids in high school want to buy some beer and they can't, and they see Corey and they say, will you buy us some beer? And he's like, no, which you shouldn't do. Don't buy underage kids beer.
No.
He's probably on parole and can't do that.
Right. And then they realize that it's, you know, he's Corey, the Halloween baby killer or whatever. They have some nickname for him. And they start taunting him, and he breaks his Yoo-hoo bottle. Corey breaks his Yoo-hoo bottle in his hand from squeezing it so hard. And Lori pulls up to gas up her car and sees them. She's like, what the fuck? And they're like, oh my God, the freak and the fucking boogeyman killer or whatever they call her. They have nicknames for both of them.
Freak and show and the psycho or something.
The freak show and the psycho. And so then the kids like run off and they drive off in their car and, you know, Lori's got a knife and she's like, why don't you slash their tires? So Corey slashes their tires. What a great idea.
And then, except for the fact that his dad runs the repair shop in town. So those kids, the kid immediately shows up the next day with his dad in the fucking car.
Yeah. And also, Lori introduces them sort of, but she also, like, Corey meets Allison anyway because, you know, Haddonfield, I guess, is a small town. And, you know, Allison is, you know, a nurse at this hospital or whatever it is. And so she's like, ooh, so smitten. Now, one of the problems I had with this movie, and I had many problems with this movie, but one is Corey is just kind of a shitty character. And it's also a shitty performance. And
yes, thank you.
I don't know that it's Rowan What's-His-Face's fault entirely because it's just so awkward. What happens is the band kids catch up to Corey some other day and they end up accidentally throwing him off a bridge.
I don't think that was an overpass.
Well, right. A highway overpass. And it's one of those falls that's not far enough to kill you, but if you landed on your neck the wrong way, it could kill you. So like the fact that he survives this fall at all is kind of,
or internal bleeding would kill you,
right?
Possibly.
Ooh, right.
Yeah. Recall.
Amazing. And then Michael Myers finds him because of course he disappeared at the end of Halloween 2, drags him into this tunnel and then tries to strangle him to death. And then he looks into Corey looks into Michael Myers' eyes and they have some sort of psychic connection via editing, and then Corey leaves the tunnel and kills this homeless guy who, you know, found Corey's knife. And then Corey goes on a killing spree because he's decided, in Lori's estimation, I think she says he's consumed by evil, but my take was he just decides to be evil. And he ends up killing, I don't think you see it on screen, but he kills his mother. He kills all the band kids. He kills the band kids, I might mention, those deaths are horrific.
Yeah, he blowtorches someone's head. He sticks the blowtorch in their mouth.
Yeah. All the while dating Allison, and you find out at the end that Allison, she says to Lori, I knew he killed those people. And it's like, so what the fuck are you doing dating him? What's wrong with you?
I think... When you're talking about, like, I think he chose to be evil, but they had this kind of like eye thing happening. I think, and this is absurd, but I think there's some kind of sexual attraction thing because
maybe
in one of the subsequent scenes when Corey is holding a guy, he brings Michael Myers a body, like a live person, and he's holding him in place. Mm-hmm. And Michael Myers is stabbing him. It's an extremely sexual position of penetration.
Yeah.
And Corey is just like he's like following his head and he's like following the stabbing, and he's clearly turned on. So whether it was accidental or the intentional, either way, it's absurd. But I'm like, wow, this is a bizarre, bizarre turn for an already shitty character in an already shitty movie.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And then the people that Corey chooses to kill, some of them just don't make sense to me. Like, did Allison tell him that the other nurse and the doctor conspired to like not promote Allison? And I don't think that conversation ever happens. Why would he kill them? You know?
Yeah, the only thing she says is that she's supposed to get a promotion. I think that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But also, kind of hard to get a promotion if he kills her boss.
Yeah.
Good point.
Good point. Yeah, I mean, just...
There's just
idea. Yeah, I like the idea of examining trauma in the way that this movie is doing it and how Halloween Kills is trying to do it. But it's just the execution of it is just so terrible.
It's bad.
And I think
it's
that
so bad.
I think that you've got a bad character in Corey, a not great performance with it, and just lots of very strange writing choices, like the whole psychic. It's like, you know, in The Force Awakens, when Rey and Kylo Ren are like psychically connected, you're like, oh, it's the Force, whatever. Who gives a fuck?
Right.
Mm-hmm. In this, it's like, wait a minute. I thought we ditched the whole Michael was like a druid thing from the Paul Rudd Halloween, you know? Like, what's going on?
Well, that's the thing. Right. These three are trying, they're retconning things. So it's a direct sequel to the original film, but yet it's also somehow pulling in threads from other Halloween films. Like, again, trying to have it both ways. You can't have it both ways. Right. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, no, you're right. I agree with you. There's this whole thing about eyes in the movie and being able to see someone and know what's going on in there. There's the whole bit about how, like, the dad of the kid that Corey killed had, like, you know, kind of, he was kind of like, I realized that, you know, Corey couldn't have done that. And so, like, I was driving along and I saw him and I wanted to, like, talk to him and say, like, you know, I had forgiven him. And then he looked at me and I looked at me, you know, he looked dead behind the eyes. You know, I'm paraphrasing what he said.
Yeah.
But there's this whole, like, bit about that in the film. Like, oh, like, he's now consumed by evil. And I am just so tired of horror movies, like, trying to pretend like they're deep by saying things like that and, like, half-heartedly analyzing the psychology of somebody who's in that situation. Halloween Kills did it. This did it. Like, either do it or don't. Like, Halloween is, to me, never been a franchise about analyzing Michael Myers as a person or his motives. He's a big, tall, scary guy who stabs people. And it's, for me, better that we don't know why he likes to kill people. It's scarier that way. But if you're gonna investigate that, like, actually do it. Don't just say, like, platitudes like he was consumed by evil or I looked in his eyes or just pose questions aloud like, was he always this way or did going through this trauma turn him into a, you know, psychopathic killer, and then never do anything with that.
Yeah, I agree. I think Michael's just a psychopathic killer. I mean, when he's like 9 years old, he stabs his sister to death. That's how the first Halloween opens, right? Like, what 9-year-old does that? So, a psycho, I guess. I don't know the correct, you know, psychological term. My apologies. Yeah, this is like, I wanted to like this, but I just, every time the whole Corey story, the Corey story came on screen, I was just like, wasted opportunity. Now, that being said, I don't know what I would have done differently. I mean, I probably wouldn't have made Halloween Kills or Halloween Ends.
Correct.
I would have made Corey the new Michael Myers. I would have made him, like, basically, like, if we're building him up to be this character and he's basically being, like, murder mentored by Michael Myers, that, like, he, the final culmination of that is that he basically takes the mask and the mantle of Michael Myers by killing the original Michael Myers. That's what I would have done. I thought that would have been a much more interesting movie.
He did take the mask. He just didn't kill Michael Myers.
Right.
Right.
He did half of that. Right. I think the problem with this movie and the problem with Halloween Kills is the problem that the Terminator franchise has often had. It's gotten away from Sarah Connor. When you get away from Laurie Strode, for me anyway, it's not as interesting. And I think that that's the huge problem, is that you focus so heavily on Laurie and the Strode women in Halloween 2018. Again, rightfully so. I love that she has a trap house. Like, that is amazing. I love that. I love that she's become this badass and she's this survivalist. Like, speaking to my Ripley, to my Sarah Connor, I love it. But if you're going to do, and those are films also, T2, Aliens, they deal with PTSD and trauma and they do it surprisingly well, and yet they don't delve
organically
into. Right, exactly. Thank you. Perfect articulation of that. They do it organically. They do it really seamlessly. They're not delving into a lot of psychology per se or a lot of dialogue, but you see the manifestations of the PTSD and the trauma throughout. And that's what these films, if you're going to have two additional films, that's what they could have done. They could have shown the trauma without telling us constantly. We could have seen more of Laurie's trauma. If they should have kept Judy Greer alive, and we could have seen her trauma. We could have seen Allison's trauma. I mean, Andy Matichak, I actually do like her. And I think she could have pulled that off. But That's my big problem. And I keep saying it, I'm a broken record. If you're going to delve into trauma, if you're going to delve into psychology, know what the fuck you're talking about and have some people on hand who know how to write this shit, because otherwise you just sound like a fool. And Evan, to your point, you're trying to sound deep, but really you're not doing anything deep at all.
No.
And it's just annoying and frustrating as a viewer.
I think, Megan, you nailed it about T2 and Aliens, because those movies dealing with PTSD are totally show. They're show PTSD. Whereas this is show, but also try to explain it to the dumb groundlings in the back, you know? So, and it's just like psychobabble silliness. And I just don't understand. Now, David Gordon Green is not a filmmaker that I'm like, oh, this guy could be great. Whatever. he's fine. Danny McBride's fine. I just don't understand the purpose of this whole thing, especially, I should add, because now Halloween 2018 is violent, but I remember from when I was a kid, I was barely old enough to remember this. One of the big complaints about Halloween 2 is how it upped the body count. It was like one of the first movies to like up the body count in a horror movie. And like reviewers were like, you had this great creepy ass fucking stalker movie. And then you just like made this thing. And that's exactly what they did with Halloween Kills and Halloween Ends. Like Michael Myers is so, I mean, how many people die in Halloween Kills? Like,
oh my God.
30? I mean, yeah. I don't even know.
So many people.
You know? And it's also one of those things where he becomes almost supernatural. Like, he kicks the car door open and he makes the woman, like, knock the, you know, gun, turn around in her hand,
like,
and she shoots
herself.
And it's just like, yes, that kind of thing can happen, but I don't know if Michael Myers is, like, savvy like that. I mean, the guy's just a lumbering killer. The whole thing about Michael Myers is that he, like, hides in the bushes and he's creepy. Mm-hmm. You know? Like...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, and that's a thing I feel like is absent from Halloween Kills, despite the fact that there are so many murders. I feel like it's completely lacking the tension that is created by Michael Myers in the Halloween movies. I don't feel any kind of tension or fear. And that's actually, I think, something that Halloween Ends got back to again, of creating this sense of tension and fear when Michael Myers is lurking around. But because they, you know, he's a little more mysterious, he's not so present in the movie as much as he is in Halloween Kills, where he's just going around murdering everybody.
Yeah. So while I like the idea of kind of pivoting away from Laurie, because in the 4 years since... Halloween Kills ended and Halloween Ends begins. God, these movie titles are fucking hard to say. you know, she's gone and done a bunch of work on herself, and Allison is the one who's still, you know, dealing daily with the fallout from this trauma. And so I think it's an interesting pivot to have her have a relationship with this other guy who's got this trauma. Also, I have now seen two movies where people get their tongues cut off in 1 year.
Yes, you have.
I have had enough. Although I did appreciate the needle skipping on the record because the tongue was on the record.
It's a nice touch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If anybody's ever had a needle, a turntable, you know how light you got to get that stylus arm. So anyway.
You know, speaking about, Dave, you bring up a great point about Allison, like, now dealing with trauma because Laurie's done so much work on herself. And I think that would have been a great direction to pivot to, is Allison. But here's the problem. The movie doesn't focus on Allison. It's Corey's movie.
Right.
And that's my big issue, is that if it was Allison's movie, I'd be totally fine with that. That would make sense, that she doesn't fully know how to deal with her trauma yet and how to deal with all of this fear. And now, you know, now that she's kind of been in complacency. And that's often when traumatic things, like when your residual feelings for trauma really kick in, is when you are in a safe space, when you can finally delve into that. But yeah, no, this is just terrible. And also, Corey is, even before he starts like murdering people, or maybe it's right when he does, because I guess there is that homeless person. I'm not sure exactly when it happens, But he's really creepy and kind of emotionally abusive to Allison kind of right out of the gate. And I'm like, ew, this is not good. And, but again, the film like never really addresses that. And again, if you're going to deal with some serious heavy issues, you got to know how to deal with them. And it doesn't. The only thing, and I do mean the only thing I liked about this movie, is I saw a tweet that BravoCon and Halloween Ends were both trending on Twitter, and that, and someone tweeted that that was a sign that more Real Housewives should be in more horror. And I will agree, because Kyle Richards is in both of those films and the original Halloween, Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. I'm here for more Bravo Housewives in horror. It's the only thing I liked. But why she's a weird tarot reader all of a sudden, like a goth tarot reader, when she has not been that way in anything else, is beyond me. It's a side story.
Yeah. Who knows? I do appreciate, though, that they finally gave Jamie Lee Curtis an out in her contract to not come back and have to kill Michael Myers again, because make no mistake, he is dead at the end of this movie. And he's not just dead. And unless they find a, you know, way to like put him back together like the Penguin did with all the shredded documents in Batman Returns, he's ground up into little Mike Myers meatballs. So I thought that Laurie, by the way, was jumping into that thing. I'm like, what are you doing? I didn't realize it had a platform edge.
Yeah, I thought so too at first. I was like, okay, this is taking things a bit far. She needs to end herself too.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I was like really yelling at the screen when she's like, I'd like to call in a suicide. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, yeah.
Yeah.
I was ready to be outraged.
So Halloween Ends. It sucks. Although it's marginally better than Halloween Kills, but not by much.
Yeah. Somehow it is. Although I was going to say somehow it's pretty easy to actually be better than Halloween Kills because it's so terrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Like Halloween Kills for me, I think I put one star in Letterboxd. I'd maybe assign like a half another star for Halloween.
Yeah, that sounds about correct. I'd give it maybe, I'd give maybe Halloween Kills a half star and one star, but still I'd keep the half star ratio, Evan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh boy. Wow. Well, watching those Halloween movies twice, you know, two bad Halloween movies twice a week has given me trauma I have to recover from. So we're going to close this episode of Spoiler Piece Theater, I think, unless anybody has anything else to say about, I see Evan shaking his head. Megan looks like she's done. So,
oh my God, yeah. No.
So that
I'm done.
Is,
I mean, yes, I'm done. No, I don't want to talk about this movie anymore.
Yeah. So that's Spoiler Piece Theater for this week, everyone. Wow. My Policeman comes out in theaters today. Halloween Ends is on Peacock exclusively right now. We want to thank our editor, Otto Klammer. Otto, thank you for doing all the editing and making us sound good each week. Great each week.
Thank you so much, Otto.
Thanks, Otto.
You can find Spoiler Piece Theater anywhere you get podcasts. If you want to go to our website, that's spoilerpiece.com. If you want to follow us on social media, we're Spoiler Piece Theater on Facebook, and we're at Spoiler Piece on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd. If you'd like to email us and tell us your, you know, thesis statement and PhD dissertation length review of Halloween Ends, don't do that. But it's spoilerpiece@gmail.com, or you can give us a call
at 862-21-PIECE.
And you can just leave a voicemail and be like, you guys are all right. Halloween Ends sucks. Peace. If you like the show, yeah. If you like the show, please rate and review us by going to ratethispodcast.com/spoilerpiece, or you can rate us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. That really helps us get the word out. And if you really, really like the show, please consider joining our Patreon. We do bonus episodes each week. And this week's bonus episode, we covered the 2013 horror movie Oculus with Karen Gillan and Brenton Thwaites about an evil mirror. Every time I say evil mirror, it just makes me laugh. Anyway, my name is Dave Riedel. I write and I talk about movies. I'm a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association, and you can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd as Dave Sees Movies.
My name is Evan Crean. I'm co-chair of the Boston Online Film Critics Association and co-author of your 80s movie guide to better living. You can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd as Real Recon, and that's real as in film reel.
And my name is Megan Kearns. I write film reviews for Edge Media Network. I, too, am a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association, and I'm also a member of Gallica. You can follow me on Twitter at Opinioness World or on Instagram and Letterboxd at The Opinioness.
See you next week, everyone. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.